It's 1:05 p.m. I'm starving. It's lunchtime. You're here. We're here. This is Around the Table. AM 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Each and every day, we invite the most interesting and influential tastemakers, newsmakers, style makers, movers, shakers, artists, foodies, healers, and friends. We save the seat at the head of the table for you, our guest of honor. And every day we gather here, right here, live in the city of gastronomy, where we are today doing this place proud. We have an extremely delicious spread. Now, I've been told that we're going to have Facebook Live cameras in the studio. They're not here yet, but if we had them, let me describe what we are looking at. And we're only looking at it right now because I have a very scant amount of self-control, and otherwise I would have a mouthful of albóndigas. I got albóndigas today from our friends at El Sur, which is located on 22nd, and it's in that sort of one-mile stretch between Gus Ballon's on one end and Ken's Hardwood Barbecue with El Sur in the middle. So Ken's and El Sur are both on the south side of 22nd, and Gus Ballon's is on the north side of 22nd. Both are... All three are within, I may be incorrect technically when I say within a mile of each other. Maybe Bob, because Bob is a Boy Scout, and Bob has his directional badge on his Boy Scout uniform sash that he's wearing today that looks kind of like an electronic dance music all access pass. I love it. He looks great today. Doing a little Devo action there for us. We can find out just how far that is, but it couldn't be more than a mile. And we're going to be talking about what this place is all about. Tucson, Arizona is one of the most delicious places on the planet, and each and every day for about 2 minutes at sunrise and sunsets, it's also one of the most beautiful. Joining us each and every Tuesday is our show sommelier, who joins us to introduce us to the kinds of wines we want to serve, sip, and share all summer long, when it's too hot to cook and it's too hot to eat. Part of our campaign this summer is, when it's too hot to cook, it's too hot to eat, let's go out and let somebody else take care of it for us. Let's go out and cultivate conviviality. No better place to do that than Revel, the wine bar that is located on 9th Street, just outside of the 4th Avenue district that some people call the shopping district, but it's the eating and drinking district that is most well known now for the streetcars and the tacos and the live music and the vibrancy of a downtown scene that is in its ascendancy. Owner and host Todd Getzelman is here each and every Tuesday to share with us a special wine that you want to put in your picnic basket, you want to have in your refrigerator for the summer sipping and celebrations. And I am so thrilled to welcome him again back to the table. How are you?
Well, hello. Doing well.
You brought bubbles.
I did. And I thought today I wanted to bring some wines that we are going to have featured tomorrow at our tasting event. But unfortunately, our delivery didn't come in time. So I brought kind of the best of two of my favorite things going on right now, both bubbles and rosé. So this is a sparkling rosé from the Cremant. Well, it's from the Bourgogne, but it's a Cremant for the Bourgogne. So, yeah. Really cool.
We're going to talk all about why this is a fantastic sip and celebration sip in particular, right, for this time of year. Also joining us today in our studio, really a true guest of honor, a long time Tucsonan. He is an artisan and an artist, and he makes extraordinary examples of culinary crafts. He's one of the world's most distinguished and talented spoon makers. And while that may sound like a kind of simple thing, when you start looking at this array, and we're going to send you to a website where you can see all of his work. He's been making these exotic wood spoons, stirring spoons, cooking spoons, and every single thing that this man's spoons touch, whether it's a cooking utensil or an eating utensil, makes it taste more delicious. I have been cooking with his spoons, and he actually makes this one. It's kind of like a modified spoon. It's more like a spoon stir stick kind of thing. It's like a narrow spoon, but a wider than a stick. It's fantastic. Bruce Thurston is here.
Hello, Jen.
How are you?
Excellent.
And the name of your website is?
Fine Wood Spoons.
See, that's what I like about somebody who's a sensible guy. This is what one of the many things I love about you. So we are going to be celebrating on many levels. And I'm going to have you lean right in, and we're going to
okay.
move this. I knocked myself right on the head there. I'm just so excited. So we're going to take your calls and questions, 520-790-2040 a little later on. We are going to talk to the National Restaurant Association, calling in from Chicago and talking about the 100th anniversary of the National Restaurant Association and the National Restaurant Association show. But Todd Getzelman from Revel Wine Bar, you've been asked by us to come in and share things with us that are light, bright, and really suitable for this time of year.
Kind of summerific.
Yeah, and one of the things we discovered when we first met you was that you have a real affinity for rosés. You brought another rosé with you today. Let's talk about, generally speaking, Tucson, because you're not originally from here, but it's deep in your soul.
Correct.
But Tucson, we know we're a craft beer town, right, but we're a fantastic wine town.
Absolutely.
You, in your role in this wine community, talk about Tucson as a wine place.
I think Tucson, in like a lot of great cities that has a certain soul and a character to them, people know kind of quality. They know what they want. It's kind of an anecdotal thing that we have about us is that, people are like, oh, you're crazy. Wine bars don't work in Arizona or in Tucson. And I look around and every party you go to, the first thing that people are drinking is wine. And right, every restaurant that you go to, the bottles and glasses on the table, wine. So I didn't believe that Tucson was not a wine drinking town. I just thought that, it's people maybe ought to have the best wine experience so far. So this is just an idea of me trying to get the best available wines and different styles of wines and just the entire wine world out in front of people here in town and kind of let them explore a little bit.
I don't drink much any longer, but when I do sip, I want something yummy. I find myself, however, facing an almost incalculable number of choices.
Absolutely.
Why do the people who sell and bring wine into this market make it so hard by giving us too much to think about?
Yeah.
Because I don't even know the number of wine SKUs that we have in the market. I bet somebody could call and tell us this. Yeah. I don't even know that I need to know the number.
Thousands, for sure.
And what you do is you sort of go through this and you really effectively and with connoisseurship and thoughtfulness curate a selection to offer your guests.
Right. And I think, part of the thing is it's kind of a trickle down. I mean, there's just a lot of wine being made in the world. So everybody's trying to get it in front of the consumer. And, if you make a bazillion bottles of wine, for the market, it becomes challenging. So what you really need to do is either spend the time as a consumer, spend the time yourself just going through and, buying bottles and buying, and some are good and some are bad. Or you can kind of trust your local wine person, just like you would at a cocktail bar or a beer bar. I mean, nobody assumes that they know everything about anything. So you have to trust the people around you to kind of guide you and talk and have a conversation about whatever your food, wine, spirits, doesn't matter.
And one of the things you do is you made a commitment and you do these complimentary wine tastings every Wednesday night, and I come out and I join you, mm-hmm, and we hang out with all our friends that come and visit.
Yep.
And you do a really different, distinguished, try something new and try something different complimentary wine tasting every Wednesday. Would you talk about that?
So we're just trying to get, like I said, just trying to get wines in front of people and also to your point of conviviality. I mean, these are kind of like I said, complimentary. We're not making any money on these things. So it's a matter of getting people out on a Wednesday afternoon downtown and kind of letting people hang out and kind of get that old world European style happy hour where you're hanging out talking. I mean, and you've seen it 1,000 times now. It's you talk to people that you may never talk to before or see people you haven't seen before or you've seen them last time they're in town or whatever. It's just kind of getting the idea of wine and comfort in front of people again and kind of making it fun.
Well, it's really cool that you do this.
Yeah.
I love that you brought bubbles because we're getting to the playoffs of Little League Baseball and, all kinds of graduations.
All the celebrations.
And I believe it was Winston Churchill who declared of champagne that in success you deserve it and in defeat you need it. So essentially, you know, whether it's daytime or nighttime, you know, essentially anytime it works.
Right.
Would you talk about the celebratory nature of bubbles and that there really is a range of bubbles? It's not just cost prohibitive bubbles and that there's really delicious bubbles at every price point from all over the world?
Yeah. I mean, the reason that I love them so much is truly because it's something that you can consume, you know, and not to sound like a crazy wine person, but, you know, it's the greatest breakfast, you know, if you're going to drink a cocktail at breakfast, not that you do that every day, but for special occasions or if you're on vacation or something like that, it truly almost goes with just about anything. And they're fun. I mean, and I think there's a little bit of thing that we push back against is like, they're not just for celebrating. There's, you know, they can be consumed, you know, on a radio show with Mexican food.
Well, we're going to try that. Do you want to open this up and tell us what you brought today?
So this is, like I said, this is a Cremant. So Cremant is basically, any French wine that is made or French sparkling wine that's made. Hang on, we'll do this for the,
Now that's the noise it's supposed to make, and I think Bob, we've got an actual. Do we have a cork sound? And we're doing some pouring.
Oh, nice! I like that.
Oh yeah.
So Cremant is just a sparkling wine made in France, specifically that is done in the traditional champagne method. So, champagne, as probably most people know now, because they've been bombarded with the ideas, is that champagne is only really made, traditionally made, in the Champagne region of France.
It has to be born in bubbles.
Yes. So that's champagne, but Cremant is just any other champagne method wine made in France as well. So
this one smells toasty and wonderful.
Yeah, so this is actually a newer wine for us. this is actually made...
And what's it called? It's called Simonet?
Simonet Fèves. Yep.
Fèves.
So these guys are actually... mostly known for their Chablis, so Chardonnay made up in the very tippy-top of Burgundy, actually probably closer to Champagne than traditional parts of Burgundy. But they're Chablis producers, but they do make this sparkling, and it's...
And when you say that it's a rosé, what are the grapes that go into this?
So this is specifically Pinot Noir and Gamay, which are... Pinot is definitely part of the Burgundy, you know, that's the main... When you think of Burgundy reds, that's Pinot Noir. Gamay is more Beaujolais, but they do grow these grapes in that region all over the place.
Right, and in a traditional champagne, we're looking at Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay grapes.
Correct.
In a traditional blend, in what would be traditionally, and then you could have different varietals used in different meritage blends within the Champagne region, within the family. So if it's just, let's say, a Pinot Noir and or a Chardonnay, they all have different names.
Right.
So for instance.
So like you could do, I mean, so rosé specifically is kind of unique because they're trying to keep, you know, that Pinot or the Meunier color in the skins. You could also do, you know, this is kind of a little aside, but a Blanc de Noir is a white wine made from dark skinned fruits. But those are white wines and they're not leaving on the skins to get the skin contact and the color. But rosés are slightly different and kind of cool because they have a little bit more, you know, that skin character adds a little bit more complexity to the wines.
For the last 5 or 10 years, we've been drinking rosé as a culture, certainly in North America, but it's been consumed forever in Europe because Revel's a European-style wine bar. Was there something sort of organic and natural to you about taking some of those traditions of warm weather in European wine bar sipping and offerings that you wanted to make sure you offered here in Tucson?
Absolutely. And I think there's just an idea also of, and I hate to say I'm a traditionalist, but I guess I kind of am, is that, you know, these places, not only France and Spain and Italy and those kind of places, but just in general, you know, if somebody's been making wine for thousands of years, you kind of look to them as some sort of guidance towards, you know, where are these wines, where are these things that we want to consume ourselves. So that's kind of our goal. I mean, we don't try to be, oh, we're European. It's more just like, well, we're into wine, and wine tends to be from Europe typically. So,
but you have wines from all over the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are great ones. And in fact, you know, kind of getting to tomorrow's tasting, we're going to have, there's one California, there's a Chilean, there's a French, actually there's two French tomorrow. So, so just a kind of wine range and you know, wines, great wines are made all over the world. And, you know, that's what we try to put in front of people is, you know, just because you like certain styles or varietals, like explore, you know, travel, you know, not only is are these wines great, the foods that typically go along with them are great. And so it's fun.
Well, we're going to make you wait for a sip because we're going to take a very quick break. This is Around the Table with the most interesting and influential gentlemen in town. We've got them here in the studio. Bruce Thurston's here. Todd Getzelman's here. And we're glad you're here as well. AM 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We're taking a break. We'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. This is the Power Lunch right here every single day and every Tuesday. My friend Todd's here with us. We'll be right back. So good. So good. This is so good. Welcome back, everybody. It's 1:24 p.m., and I've got half a mouthful. We are noshing, nibbling, and sipping and sharing. We are conversing, and we are cultivating conviviality here around the table. This is AM 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Todd Getzelman from Revel Wine Bar is here, as he is each and every Tuesday, because he's got a mission. We charged him with this mission to help sustain us through the summer months. Whether you're entertaining at home, you're coming downtown, you're going out, we believe that when it gets too hot to cook and it gets too hot to eat, whether you're staying at home or going out, you want to know what you can sip to really just embrace and accept the fact that it's hot here and we're together. So let's all go out. Let's all go out and cultivate conviviality together. And in order to do that, we reached out to our friends in the business. And Todd is our friend in the wine business and said, okay, we want something really yummy that's accessibly priced, that's going to knock our socks off, that's going to make us happy in these hot days. And it's going to be something that we're going to want to turn our friends on to, because that was the last part of this mission. Make something known to me. Taste me on something that I'm going to be proud to turn around and bring my friends to your place and turn them on to, and that makes me a hospitality hero. And when we talked about that, I know you laughed, because you do that to people every day. I mean, that's why you're in business. You're in business to turn people on to these things.
So. Well, and just being around, I mean, what I find fascinating about being in the business, especially where we are downtown, is all the new places that pop up, or sometimes, you know, people, you know, chefs, mixologists come in and you start talking about whatever, and you just get turned on to new little ideas all over the town. And it's really fun just to see, you know, and you trust, you know, people who have been there and they truly appreciate, you know, the nice things in Tucson. So,
well, you know you're doing something right when all the other people in the hospitality industry come and hang out with you.
Yeah.
And people in the trade are at your place all the time.
Exactly. And, you know, and I'm the same way. You know, I love wine and I, you know, consume it regularly. But every once in a while, I still want a beer or I still want to get a cocktail. And I'm like, I'm sick of Revel.
Well, listen, our other guest in the studio with us, Bruce Thurston, is here. And he's a beer guy, but he's also a wine guy. And I want to get your opinions on that, because not only are you a beer and wine guy, but you're a Tucsonan.
Yep.
And you're
born and raised.
I know. You're one of the rare ones. And you are also somebody that knows their way around the food of this region.
Not as well as you do.
Well.
But just from being here for all these many years, yeah, you learn your way around.
And so we've got a little bit of taco in front of us. We've got ceviche tostada.
Yummy ceviche.
And I can't believe I turned you on to a place that you hadn't been, but it's been around for a while, called El Sur.
El Sur. It was wonderful. We'll be back.
I know. That's when you know you've done something right, where somebody goes, I'll be back here.
Yeah.
Like, it just all of a sudden goes on that magic list that you keep somewhere tucked in your your brain, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I've got a nephew that I have lunch or breakfast with every Saturday, and we go at 7:00. And they're not open at 7:00. And the nice lady at El Sur said, come in the back door at 7:00. We'll take care of you.
That's a Tucson thing.
That's exactly. You love that.
You know you're doing something right in the world
Exactly.
That's how it is here. Now, how is the food? Because have you tried the albondigas yet?
I haven't tried the albondigas, but I did have some of the ceviche that was delightful.
Yeah.
And one of the things that makes that ceviche tostada delightful is it costs $1.50.
Wow.
Because it was the special of the day. Because they do happy hour all day.
Well, Tucson likes a bargain.
Right?
Partner, that's a bargain.
That, and one of the words they use here is it's a gonga. Did they invent that here, or is that a California thing?
No, that was invented here.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
And what does it actually mean?
There was a furniture shop in town, and he would advertise on the late movies with Hank Lomanac and Jim Click, and they were on there and do stuff, and it was his thing. Partner, that's a gonga.
Partner, that's a gonga.
That's a gonga.
You came to the show today to talk about your fine wooden spoons, but in fact, you took me aside and said, I've got to teach you the ways of Tucson. You were like my you're like my Tucson Yoda. You're gonna school me. I'm gonna make you choke on your albóndigas there. You're laughing. There are things that if you're here, you need to know and you need to learn. And I have so much to learn. And you generously agreed to try and teach some of this to me. And there were some phrases, like you used, we were talking about something today and you used the phrase, near as I can tell.
Yeah.
And that just trickled off your tongue. Like.
You don't know that?
I think I've heard it, but what does it mean? Near as I can tell. But it sounded like a very Tucsonan kind of thing, because I've heard it here before.
I use it in reference to someone that maybe I don't know well, but how my impression of them in a first encounter, first or second, just a couple of encounters. So near as I can tell, he's all right.
Well, near as I can tell.
Like Todd. Near as I can tell, he's all right.
Pretty good guy. The guy who shows up with wine in his hand. Yeah. Can't be that bad.
Well, listen, and then Todd turns around and gives a taste at these complimentary wine tastings that he hosts at Revel Wine Bar every Wednesday night. So people take a little sniff and a little taste of what he's pouring and go, near as I can tell, that's tasty.
He's got a big job educating Tucson, because I know a ton of people in Tucson that know that wine comes in a box.
Yeah.
And there's two colors, so you can get red or you can get white. And they think that probably the two are kind of mixed together to make the pink stuff that we're drinking today.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's one thing that we really try to say is, like, just because we have a certain menu, wine list, doesn't mean that people can't enjoy wine, because wine is meant to be enjoyed. I mean, hopefully people, if they want to learn, will eventually, step out of their comfort zone a little bit and challenge themselves a little
bit. I'm sure you come across people that, I like red wine.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't like white wine. I like red
wine. Yeah.
And then there's the opposite. I'm a white wine drinker.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if they're male or female or anything. Yeah. And it's not really a matter of knowledge. It's all personal preference. Yeah.
But the most satisfying thing for us is when we have those kind of, single-minded people about wines, and then you give them just a little taste of something that they say, I don't do that. And then they go, oh, wow, that's really nice. Which is, typically, my brother, my oldest brother, he is one of those only red wine drinkers, and we come from a wine family, and he still is. I only drink reds, but I've been slowly prodding him, and now he's
converting him.
He's slowly becoming a sparkling drinker.
Well, when you say that, I'm like, drip, drip, drip. Oh, yeah, you got me. You got me. We also are breaking bread together today. Do you know what we have to share with you today that goes with this wine?
I'm hoping it's Don Gurr's red.
Lucky Pierre.
Uh-huh. Now this, at this. This is a thing of beauty, and I'm gonna have Todd break bread today, and he's gonna use the microphone, and he's gonna.
Oh,
that's such real bread.
C'est bon.
That is awesome.
That's awesome.
And it's beautiful on the inside, and it's got that
smells amazing.
Distinctive tang. Let's talk about Pan y Vino. We use it to describe the situation that represents all food, that if you have bread and wine, really, life can be good.
Right.
Right. It's humble, it's simple, and yet when in the hands of a great craftsman, and craftsmanship is certainly one of the things we're talking about today, Bruce Thurston and his craftsmanship and the spoons, Don Guerra and the breads that he's made and shared with us today, and this wine that you've brought us from Bourgogne, it's a Cremant, and a Cremant is a bubbly wine Why am I telling you that? Please.
Yeah, so sparkling wine made in the traditional champagne method. And the reason that those wines tend to be, and this is, you know, one of those educational kind of things we have to kind of explain why they're expensive, is that there's a lot of labor involved in making these styles of wine. You know, not only making the wine itself, the base wine, but then you, like a secondary fermentation that happens in the same bottle that this wine is being poured from. And that just takes time. I mean, this...
Do they put these on riddling racks and turn them and all that? Or is that a different kind of process that's distinctive to champagne?
That is the traditional method. I mean, that's what was originally done. Now, most commercial... I mean, the super, super high-end, maybe the Tête du Cuvées are still done hand-riddled, but it's becoming more and more rare. Now, they kind of do it on these things called gyro pallets. They kind of do it automatically. It's kind of robot-y.
It's like what the fancy guys put their watches in to keep them.
Exactly. You know,
like, I only wear it once in a while, but I got to keep it going.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, still, the method is still the same. You're basically, you know, slowly making these wines over years and years and years.
You brought this wine because we thought we might bring one of two foods. We thought we might bring the Boxyard Bronx Tale BXQ cheeseburger that would go with this really beautifully.
Yeah.
Or what we ended up bringing, which is this beautiful Mexican food.
Right.
This fantastic ceviche tostada and these little tacos. Talk about how a wine like this goes with the very distinctive and traditional cuisine of Tucson.
I mean, the reason I think, well, there's kind of a running joke in the wine world about what do you pair with Mexican food? Beer. So it's challenging a lot of times because Mexican food typically has so many different flavors and complexities that are pretty difficult to pair with wine. So that's why I think sparkling does a great job because it's got that little lift from the carbonation. It's not overpowering in any certain category. It's just refreshing and light and basically goes with almost anything. So
as our friend in the business, and we're talking about, you know, Memorial Day is coming up. We need something to put in our picnic baskets to go to the Tucson Pops concerts. I went to the opening night of Tucson Pops, and almost everybody had a bottle of wine on their cooler with a napkin or a tablecloth over it. It was, Bruce, I mean, I know you've been to these guys. At Reed Park, it was a shock to me.
Yeah.
They really turn out and turn up with some fancy spreads.
Yeah, that's cool. I haven't been, but I could imagine. I couldn't picture a better thing to have for those kind of events where you kind of, I mean, not that it's special or it's fancy, it's just, it's different. You know, you can drink your everyday stuff every day, but, you know, it's nice if you're getting together with friends and, you know, maybe everybody brings a bottle of something and it's fun.
Well, I brought the program from the Tucson Pops, and I'm going to sit down with you, and we're going to pick a wine to go with the program for the next 5 weeks.
I like that.
Because everything in the program is going to have some distinctive element that you're going to just, your spirit is just going to jump out and say, I pick that, and I'm going to pair with that.
Yeah, I'm up for the challenge.
For instance, last Sunday, it was Fanfare for the Common Man by Aaron Copland. But then it was also the music of Star Wars. So do you go with Star Wars or Fanfare for the Common Man? Kind of. You could do both.
Yeah.
And you know, that it was interesting to see what people brought.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah. We're going to have a lot of fun. Hey, listen, we're going to take another very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. Take your calls and questions, 520-790-2040. We're going to have another bite of this extraordinarily delicious ceviche from El Sur. I want to say a shout out to the team over there, the ladies. Can you believe, Bruce, how busy it was? I mean, they were slammed.
Yeah, it was nice. It was really busy. It creates a really nice positive energy in the restaurant when you walk in. When you see that, you're happy to be there. You know you're in the right place.
Yeah.
And
there's a couple of pickup trucks out front. That's always one of my guides. You know, if there's trucks there.
Is that a Tucson clue?
Yep.
That it is.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
I love that. AM 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This is Around the Table, live from the City of Gastronomy. We'll be back with more right after this. That is such an awesome sound. When you're a hostess, you love to look across the table and hear your guests and see them smiling. You know, we cook for compliments. And when we cook and when we entertain and we invite our friends into our homes, you know, when you come to my house and I'm trying to make you feel welcome, that's the art of hospitality. Today we are having Todd Getzelman from Revel Wine Bar in downtown Tucson on 9th Street, right at the sort of at the mouth of downtown. It's like in that juggernaut position between like downtown and 4th Avenue downtown. I mean, you are like in the heart of the heart of the heart of downtown.
Yeah, we love our spot.
And you brought, because you are our show sommelier, you brought some wine for us today. That you're going to come every Tuesday and introduce us to a wine that is potentially going to be your new favorite wine of the summer.
Right.
And you brought us a bubbly wine today.
Yep.
And it goes so well with the Mexican food that we've been basically nibbling happily all through the break.
Can we make the rest of the show break? And we'll just sit here and eat
tacos.
You actually could do that. The two of you can just sit there.
I could do that.
Because nothing would make me happier than to see you guys just like, yeah, let's have it. Bruce Thurston is here. He's a longtime Tucsonan, and he's one of the artisans who makes this place one of the most delicious places on the planet. This is AM 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk, where the local news is the local talk. The show is Around the Table, live from the City of Gastronomy, where we have the most interesting and influential newsmakers, taste makers, style makers, artisans, foodies, friends, healers, and you. We've saved the seat at the head of the table for you, our guest of honor. We would love to hear from you. 520-790-2040 is the number. And we would welcome your participation in our conversation about craftsmanship. Tucson is the kind of place where craftsmanship can be found literally from the foothills on all four mountains, all to the north, all to the south, all the way to the border and back. Whether the craftsmanship is of a culinary nature like we're enjoying today from El Sur. And we actually got a little taste of some really typical Tucson cuisine today. We're having some tacos, albondigas soup. We have a ceviche tostada, and we're washing it all down with the Simonette Febre. And I'm gonna have Todd help me say that one more time the right
Simonette
way. Simonette Febre. It sounds like the fizz. It almost looks like we should say Simonette Fizz.
Yeah.
Because it's got the bubbles. Listen, one of the traditions in this culture of this region is to toast. Mm. And if you're toasting with a cold beer or a glass of wine or a shot of tequila, there's a very traditional Tucsonan toast, you know, adentro al centro. What are the toasting traditions that you have seen at Revel and that you are also encouraging and reviving at Revel? Because one of the great wine bar traditions is marking that moment of conviviality when people clink their glasses together. So what are people toasting these days at Revel?
The typical, you know, it's funny because I think the toast has kind of lost some of its prowess a little bit, I guess, or whatever, which definitely should come back for sure. You know, typically people, you know, the typical cheers, sante, those kind of things. But I think you have a great one that I always forget, but you have a...
We'll share it on the other side. We have a caller who's called in with a question. Caller, thank you for calling in today. Cheers. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Miss Jen?
Oh, I'm doing great. Tell me a little bit about what you're having for lunch today. Have you been down to Revel yet?
Yeah, I've been to Revel. It was I've been there a couple times, and they had just a fantastic array of... both times they were white and rosés, and normally I'm not a big rosé fan, but those were quite tasty.
Oh, thank you.
As a matter of fact, I bought one of them and put it in my fridge.
All right.
So are you a wine drinker usually in the summer months here in Tucson?
You know, actually, I tend to go for the beer. I like a dark beer year round, but I'm finding that a lighter wine breaks out very nicely.
Absolutely.
Now, tell me, what are you having for lunch today?
For lunch, I had Chinese food today, but I had a fantastic meal last night with you know, spaghetti squash and smoked salmon and asparagus all mixed up with lemon and herbs. It was quite fine.
So, that sounds great.
And that bottle of rosé was just perfect. <to go with. laughs>
You know, I think that's really surprising. I don't mean to cut you off, but don't go anywhere. But Todd Getzelman from Revel Wine Bar is our guest. He's our show sommelier. He comes each and every Tuesday to visit with us. Why do people like the caller have this sense, I don't usually like rosé wine? What is the lingering impression that happened somewhere? And what is it that, because people carry that with them. And right. You, I mean, one of your big missions is to eradicate that.
Right. I mean, traditionally that the barrier was that, you know, it's back in the 60s or early 70s, I forget when it was, maybe in the 50s, that white Zinfandel craze came out of California, and it was a rosé that was a sweet wine that was never really meant to be anything special. It was not what the French had been drinking, the Provence-style rosés. And so a lot of Americans just never got on board with this idea of a sweet kind of cloying, kind of a simple wine that wasn't very good. So now, you know, we were exposed to better rosés, and people are finally coming around to the idea. And not finally, I mean, rosé has been a thing for last almost 10 years now, I guess.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, Colin, you had a question. Hello, caller, are you there? Yeah.
Hi, yeah, I'm here. Sorry.
That's okay. Caller, do you have a question?
Yeah. What's the most interesting white wine that you've gotten from Italy recently? Ooh. You know, my mom's family's from Italy, and I like to enjoy the wines from the old country every once in a while.
Yeah. It's great. I would say, I'm trying to rack my brain real fast on which Italian wines I've had recently, but the one that's popping out is actually one we did with our Italian wine dinner a few months back, and it's a Pigato. I think Pigato is the varietal. I'm questioning myself now, but it's from the kind of the east, northeastern, so just south of Piemonte. If you're on the coast, Liguria is right there, and I believe that's where this wording came from. And it's just got all that, you know, it's not a big, heavy wine, but it does, it's not like a light, super simple Pinot Grigio. It's got just kind of that medium balance that's just perfect. It's a great food wine. It's got a little hint of a salinity to it, and it's my new favorite.
Well, my favorite Italian taste of the last few months was a rosé. I mean, I don't mean to make it like rosé all the
beat
time,
your head over it.
but it was an Italian rosé, and I don't think it ever had one. And it was pretty, and it was part of one of your tastings.
Yeah,
and it smelled amazing.
Yeah, and back to the question. I mean, there's just so many. The neat thing about Italian wines is that there's so many. I think, you know, in Italy, I forget the exact number now, but like in the thousands of different varietals that you can get into, and they're all regional. And you know, we kind of get stuck in America with the big, you know, the Pinot Grigios and maybe some Vermentino or maybe some Verdicchios or those kind of wines. But, you know, if you really dive into it, there's so many great Italian whites specifically. I mean, the reds are kind of famous, Barolo, Barbaresco, Chiantis, those kind of wines. But if you want to dive into some of the whites, I mean, there's so many great ones out there.
Thank you, caller.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I have a question for you. I've been packing picnic baskets, and we did an entire show last week at Tucson Foodie Headquarters about getting ready for the Tucson Pops concerts and packing picnic baskets. And I had more than a few people say, have you tried the wine in cans? Now, Bruce, you joked early at the beginning of the show about wine that comes in boxes.
Right.
And it wasn't a joke. It was
no. It's a serious comment on people that drink beer in Tucson.
But there are people who have started putting really potable, lovely wines in cans. Will you talk about that trend?
Sure. I mean, it's definitely an up-and-coming thing. You know, it's great for those kind of things where, yeah, I mean, it's tough to bring a bottle of wine. I mean, number one, you don't always have a wine opener on you. Sometimes you don't want to be carrying glass around. It's a little heavier. So yeah, it's definitely a trend, and I think there's some opportunities. The quality is coming up for sure. I mean, like all things, when most new things come out, they can be a little gimmicky and a little the quality is not quite there. But nowadays, yeah, there's some really great wines in cans out there. And I don't know, this is not an aside, but there's the other thing that I've seen that I really love is you know, the hydro flask idea, where, you know, we actually have one at Revel too.
That's what's a hydro flask?
It's that like old. It's like an old thermos, basically. I mean, it's like a vacuum sealed thermos, basically, where you can take, and I think it's a great idea, take your white wine. It doesn't work so well with sparklings, but your white wines, or even your reds, pour it into a insulated container, take that to your picnic or your, you know, wherever you're going. And that way the temperature's maintained. You don't worry about bringing extra you know, waste that you have to lug out of there. I mean, you bring your canteen with you and you put it back in there, and it maintains the temperature, and that's super important with whites and reds. But in Tucson, like, yeah, there's the hydro flasks or the ones we have are corkscrews. They'll keep temperatures for 24 hours. I mean, so you could even take it overnight and be fine.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, Todd, you didn't know Bruce before today, but you've been eyeing, as we all have, this array of fine exotic wood spoons that he's brought into the studio. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you guys on the show together was because you're both really like connoisseurs and gentlemen. And I thought that you'd find some common ground around these really beautiful objects that are art that you can live with. And that's sort of, to my mind, the thing that connoisseurship in the world of wine bars. Like, if you're the kind of person who can, like, go to a great wine bar and have a glass of rosé, you're the kind of person who would appreciate having one really beautiful wooden spoon to cook with rather than a drawer full of, like, indistinguishable plastic.
Throwaway plastic.
Right. And so that's why I wanted to make the love connection here and have you both on today and to share the food and the wine. So
thank you.
Thanks.
So how did you get started making these, Bruce? Because you have a background as a home builder.
Right. And as a woodworker. Dad, uncle, brother, all of those people were all carpenters and craftsmen. So it was a natural. I had the tools. I had the material. After I got married, my wife was making a nice pot of spaghetti sauce, as you heard our caller say. And I saw that she needed a longer spoon to be able to reach the bottom of the pot. So that started what I brought was spoon number one.
Oh, that is the famous spoon from your website.
This is numero uno from the website.
Uh-huh. That's cool.
And that
you
is...
can see it and touch it, how it's been after 54 years of marriage. It's still pretty nice.
This is an over 50-year-old wooden spoon.
Right.
And if you've ever bought a spoon at a dollar store and it disintegrates or it shreds or it's...
The first thing it does is raise the grain.
Yeah.
And they get all rough and they feel bad in your hand. And so I have matured or evolved or something like that in what I do and how I do it and the woods that I choose to make spoons from. So...
This is amazing. This is like touching a fine piece of Danish modern furniture that is in the MoMA collection.
Yeah.
And it's used. This isn't something
that's... Oh, yeah. You can see the scar on the back from the pot where it laid on the pot one time, got a little too hot there.
That's so funny. And what I'll say about that that's so interesting to me is that's a spoon that has a very useful life. This isn't something that was like socked away in a cedar chest, like a hope chest, and never got used.
I have given some to my family and things and sold some to the family and stuff. And I go back and I say, well, how's your spoon? How's it working? Does it need to go back to the spoon spa and have a facelift?
Spoon spa.
And they say, oh, no, it's on the wall. I say, uh-oh, give it here. You know, all my spoons are subject to repossession. They're happiest when they're used daily. So if you're going to hang it on the wall, you don't want one of my spoons. I don't want you to have one of my spoons. My spoon doesn't want to go home with you. This is to go in the pot every day or every day, you know, to be used regularly.
Now, you're talking about these spoons like they're alive, like they have personality. And when I look down there, they almost look like they've all got their own personality and that they're alive. Do you think of them that way?
They're my kids, in addition to...
Your real kids.
Mm-hmm, my biological kids. They're my family, and they come home. And I can remember all the ones that have come back, and several of them have, to get fixed back up again because they get used so heavily. They show the wear, and people want it to look like new. Great, send it in. No charge, no nothing like that. You know, just I'm happy to see them again. And they come back in a couple of days. I've worked on them, and they're ready to go back out. So I brought one that's out of the bowl at my kitchen, and that's been used and hasn't been refurbed in a long time, and it's still smooth and nice. It feels good in your hand, and that's kind of where my inspiration developed.
Isn't that amazing?
Like, is that
You have a look on your face like you can't. That's why I wanted you to see these, because these are unbelievable.
Is there a specific kind of woods that you're using? It looks like there's kind of a variety there.
There is a huge variety. And I've only discarded one type that I won't use anymore, and that's eucalypt. Eucalyptus didn't work out. Didn't like it. It didn't perform well in the kitchen. They made great-looking spoons, had some nice-looking wood. Didn't work. I don't do that. But I use most every other kind of wood. I'm partial to, for somebody that is in a commercial kitchen or they cook a lot and they're going to use it a lot, I like to use some hard maple or some olive. Makes a really nice spoon. They have great color, and they perform well in the kitchen. They stay nice and smooth.
Did you bring any olive wood spoons? Because we have in front of us an array of maybe 8 or 10.
I didn't bring any
tools.
Olive.
And there are different colors.
I brought a variety of things to show the different imposition that the wood makes on me as the liberator of the spoon.
Oh, interesting way to put that. What do you mean by that?
Well, in every piece of wood, there's something in there. And sometimes when I look at it, I can see something. And when I start, it isn't there. But something else is. Yeah. And so I start going this way, and I end up going that way with it. You know. And sometimes when you cut open and you sand and this and that, you find an imperfection or a flaw that you don't want, especially down at the end of the spoon, in the cup.
On the tip of the bowl there.
Yeah, in the bowl of the spoon. And so that's how spoons like this come about. This is a piece of Arizona ash, and it started out to be a nice wide spoon, a big thing like that. And there was a this, and there was a that. There was some knots and some splits and things. And so now it's a thin spoon with kind of a wavy handle to it.
Like a sculptor.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Just carve away the bits that don't look like a spoon. Bruce, you know what we're going to do? Can you stick around and visit with us some more?
Sure.
Because not only did I bring you the wine guy.
Yeah.
I brought you a beer. I got a beer guy coming to talk to you today, too.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
But not just a beer. My favorite.
You may have to drive home.
My favorite beer guys. My favorite beer guys coming in. Todd Gesselman from Revel Wine Bar.
Thanks,
European style wine bar on 9th Street, right near the corner at 4th Avenue. And bringing tastes to life tomorrow night, 5:30 to 7 p.m.
Yep. Absolutely. Complimentary happy hour. Come on down and see us.
Complimentary happy hour tomorrow, Todd. We will see you tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
Everybody come and join us. Bruce, you're going to stick around. For all of you, this is Around the Table. Broadcasting live on AM 1030, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk. We'll be back with more right after this. And if you've got to go back to work, and this is the last we get to say hi to you today, when you get home, do this for me. Hug your kids and count your blessings. And don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.